Welcome to Jaipur Bites. I'm your host, Laksh Datta. This episode is the edited version of a live session from the Jaipur Literature Festival 2021. Six Suspects. Vikas Swaroop in conversation with Shubhra Gupta.
Very pleased to be here, and it's such a lovely February afternoon. I've been sitting at the back and listening to everybody and just savoring this great location. I love the tree. It's so filmy. This whole location is so filmy, and I'm sure if there were some directors right here, they would be like, you know, taking their cameras out, and we would be shooting right as we speak. So lovely location to be talking to Vikas. And
same here. I think the only thing we need now is a murder.
Yes, maybe a murder or two. So yesterday I did something really smart because I had forgotten the book. I had read it when it came out. So I did the next best thing and I picked up the phone on Vikas and said, okay, tell me. So he said, what you need is a kunji. I said, exactly what we need is a kunji. So we are going to be talking about Six Suspects, which is going to be turning into a web series very soon. It's been underway for some time, and Vikas is deeply involved in it. We will also be speaking about Vikas's own experiences with being an author who has turned into film a little before this as well. So let's begin with the beginning. And I was very curious to know how a diplomat turned into an author.
So thank you, Shubhra. For me also, it's wonderful to be here, to be back at the JLF, albeit in a different setting from the Diggy Palace, but it's always wonderful to be at the greatest literary show on earth. So thank you, Sanjoy, for this opportunity. And I call myself an accidental writer because, I got into writing entirely by accident. And in fact, the reason I got into writing is two of the reasons are right here. There's Mr. Navdeep Sarna sitting there, and there is Navdeep Suri. And both of them belong to the Indian Foreign Service, to which I belong, the same tribe. And they were, Navtej had just come out with his first novel called We Weren't Lovers Like That. And Navdeep was busy translating his grandfather's novel, The Watchmaker, from Punjabi into Hindi. So that acted as an inspiration to me. I said, hang on. I didn't know so many people in the Foreign Service, could be fiction writers. So do I also have a book inside me? Can I also write something? So it's really started as a challenge. And the good thing was, at that time, I was posted in London. And London, as you know, is the hub of the world of English language publishing. Almost every week you heard a new book being promoted, a new author being born. So I said, if I have to write something, I better write in London. I wrote this book, believe it or not, in just 2 months. Mainly because my wife Aparna, who's also here, had gone back to Delhi with my two sons, and I was all alone. So as a male chauvinist pig remarked, sometimes behind a successful man, there is an absent woman.
So an absence of the of your better half, and also a challenge that you had set up for yourself, and 2 months. That must have been like one of the fastest books ever written. And I was wondering, did you think of it turning into a cinematic expedition when you were writing it?
BBC asked me this question. They said, when you were writing this book, could you visualize it as a film? And my answer was, I couldn't even visualize it as a book. Because, first time author, I had no idea how the world of publishing worked, what one needed to do. I based my, the way I approached it, I basically read up a lot of Indian writers in English, which before that I had not really read that many Indian writers in English. Most of my reading was Western writers. So I read up a lot of the Indian writers in English, Arundhati Roy, Pankaj Mishra, V.S. Naipaul, all these people. And then at the end, most of the writers, in their acknowledgments, they thank their publisher and their agent. So I looked up the names of the agents from these books. Most of them were based in London. So I wrote 4.5 chapters and I sent it out to 10 agents, hoping one of them would pick me up. I wasn't picked up by any of those because, they never got back to me. And I met my actual agent, one day just surfing the web. And I sent him these 4.5 chapters. He loved it, and he said, and of course, I pretended at that time that I had written the whole novel. He said, I'm coming to meet you, and where's the rest of the novel? I said, there is no rest of the novel. So he says, you have to finish this novel before I can market it, because you're a first-time writer. I have no idea, you know, whether you'll show the same consistency in the remaining chapters as you are showing now. And the day I met him, that very day I got a call from Delhi that you are coming back to Delhi, and we are going to post you as director in charge of Pakistan. So anybody who knows India-Pakistan relations knows, you know, how prone they are to accident. So I said, if I go back now to Delhi and write and try to finish this novel, I can say goodbye to it because, you know, it'll be a 24/7 existence. So I said, I still have 2 months left in London. And that's why actually I wrote this novel in those 2 months. So I finished this novel, I think, on the 13th of September 2003. And on the 14th of September, I was sitting in an Air India plane going back to Delhi.
Okay, that's quite a fascinating story. And I think the other fascinating story was when you shared with me was about how Danny Boyle reached out to you and or reached out to the publishers, and it was an accidental coming to know that your book is going to be a movie, right? It was like a circuitous thing. You didn't know about it directly.
No, in the sense, look, I mean, it was not as if that they adapted the book without my knowledge or permission. No. I wrote this novel, as I just told you, in 2003. And the novel was actually published in 2005, even though it was picked up for publication in 2003. But the publisher said, look, this looks like a big book to us. It's a very unique way of telling a story. But all our big books are already lined up for the next 2 years. So you'll have to wait for another 2 years before we publish this book. So I said, fine. I mean, first time writer, you don't have any choice in these matters. So I said, OK, I'll wait for 2 years. And I got a call from Film 4 in 2004. That we want to make a film based on your book. So I said, hang on, the book has not even been published. How do you know I've even written something? And then they said, no, your publisher tipped us off. We've seen the manuscript, we love it, and we think it'll make a fabulous film. So sign on page 72. I signed on page 72. And then, of course, the way the film business work, and you yourself would know this being a film critic, the publishers basically give it out to film scouts, they approach some production houses, they buy up the rights, and then they approach a screenplay writer. So the first person who got attached to this project was Simon Beaufoy, who wrote the screenplay. And once the screenplay is written, then they approach various directors who they feel would be a good fit for this kind of a screenplay. And that's how Danny Boyle got involved. And then the casting begins. So what I discussed with you was how Danny Boyle cast Dev Patel. Because Danny Boyle was very keen, you know, the book was not called Slumdog Millionaire, it was called Q&A, but it was about a slum dweller, you know, who comes to the biggest quiz show on earth and answers all the questions and wins it. So Danny Boyle told me this personally. He said he came to Bombay and he started auditioning various people for this title role of this slum boy. And he says, I met all the actors I met had six-pack abs, you know. I mean, they were all buffed up and, you know, with bulging biceps. They all used to go to the gym. And he said, I was looking for a rather impoverished, somebody who had a vulnerable look. And he couldn't really cast anybody in Delhi. Then his daughter, who was a fan of this BBC show called Skins, in which Dev Patel was also starring, she was the one who suggested Dev Patel's name to Danny Boyle. And the rest, as they say, is history.
So, yeah, and I think when I saw the film, I was one of the few people in my community and in the people who were critically looking at the film. I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. And for many other people, it was poverty porn and all of those other adjectives that they attached to it. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was a lovely, kinetic, terrific telling of a tale of the India of that time. Right, so I think more than the format, which is of course the quiz and Dev Patel's accent, which is of course nothing to do with the Mumbaiya guy, but I think the whole thing came together really well. And I asked you yesterday whether you enjoyed the film, and please tell us.
Yeah, I think I the first time I saw the film was at the London Film Festival, where it was the closing film in 2008. And I really felt it was a great package, you know. This film, as you know, was nominated for 10 Oscars. How many films do you know which have been nominated for multiple Oscars without a single acting award? There was no Oscar nomination for best actor, best actress, best supporting actor, best supporting actress, because everybody had small roles. You know, nobody really, except Dev Patel, who had a, you know, I mean, whose was a continuing one. Everybody else featured in sort of limited, lengths of time. But the entire package was beautifully put together. So I think the soul of the film was really the acting by the child actors. Then the music by A.R. Rahman was amazing. It was the first time a Hollywood film had a Bollywood score kind of a thing. But and he really gave it a tonal quality which was till then completely lacking from such films. And finally, I think Anthony Dodd Mantle's, as you said, the word kinetic cinematography, where you could actually feel yourself going into the alleys of Dharavi, you know, chasing those boys. So, and I think Danny Boyle's genius was how he was able to bring all these disparate, elements together into a fantastic package. And when he came to Bombay, this was his first visit to India. He had never been to India. So when he saw Dharavi, I mean, he just looked at it from a cinematic point of view. He said, my God, all these huts with blue tarpaulins on top, when he saw it from the airport, or from the air, as the plane was landing. I mean, he just fell in love with it. He said, this is incredible. So, yes, you were, I think, in a minority, because most people dismissed the film in India, saying this is, you know, it glorifies poverty, it is poverty porn. And then there was the shit scene, as you know, which was not in the book at all. So all those things, I think, twisted people's perception of it a little bit. But I think Danny Boyle approached it with a lot of respect for the people of India and for Mumbai. I don't think he had any intention of dehumanizing or glorifying poverty. It's just that the subject matter itself was such that, you know, you could not avoid the slums, because the whole idea is that how can somebody living in a slum who has never had formal education, how can that person appear on a brain quiz and actually win? Because the point I wanted to show through the book was that the greatest teacher in the world is life itself. And those who graduate from the school of hard knocks, for them, every moment in life is meaningful and precious.
Absolutely. And I think when I look back at the film, and I the first thing that I remember is, I mean, many things, of course, but I think that the scene that I remember most is the one in which the cops are chasing the, you know, in it's like a top angle shot, and you can see the slums and you can see the figures. And it was also in one of Anurag Kashyap's most well-known films. If you've seen Black Friday, it's exactly the same kind of thing that happens. So, and a conversation that I had with Anurag Kashyap later, he was talking to me about how Danny Boyle and he had a chat. And yes, and there was a lovely influence that happened between the two of them, confluence, influence, whatever you say. Yeah, so okay. So moving on to Six Suspects, which is really what is current right now. I asked you, and I think you've heard this very many times, I said to Vikas yesterday, so that was the book that was based on the Jessica Lal murder, wasn't it? And your response was?
My response was absolutely not. I mean, that's the whole thing. In India, many people think that that book was based on Jessica Lal. It was inspired by Jessica Lal. I mean, for those of you, and I'm sure there are many here who have not read the book, will probably watch the web series as and when it comes out. What happens is, this is a book in which there is this 25-year-old playboy called Vicky Rai. He's the son of the Home Minister of UP. And, you know, he's a, what should I say, he's a charlatan, he's a womanizing type of, he's a cad, really. So when he was 15 years old, his father gifted him a BMW. He took it out for a spin, and while coming back at night, he mowed down 6 homeless people who were sleeping on the pavement.
Which was actually also something that happened.
Exactly.
Yes,
so
that's right.
Case comes to trial. None of the witnesses remember seeing a BMW. They say it was a truck with Gujarat number plates or something like that. He's acquitted. When he's 20 years old, he goes to a wildlife sanctuary in Rajasthan and shoots dead 2 black bucks.
That's also something that
happened.
Again,
case comes to trial. The only eyewitness who had seen him shoot the black buck, the forest ranger, dies mysteriously. And again, he's acquitted. When he's 25 years old, he decides to celebrate his birthday at a trendy pub on the Delhi-Jaipur highway. Goes to the bar at 2 a.m., asks for a drink. The bartender is a young woman called Ruby Gill. She says, sorry, sir, the bar is closed. I can't give you a drink. He says, what the hell do you mean? Don't you know who I am? She says, sorry, sir, the rule is the same for everyone. He just takes out his gun, pumps 2 bullets into her. She dies on the spot. 50 eyewitnesses saw him shoot the girl. He's arrested. Case comes to trial. It drags on for 7 years. In those 7 years, many things happen. The the murder weapon disappears from the police lockup. The ballistics report says the two bullets were fired from two different guns. All the eyewitnesses change their testimony, so he's released once again. And to celebrate this acquittal, he holds a big party in his farmhouse, which is very close to here in Mehrauli. And 300, 400 guests are there. Everybody's enjoying themselves. Live band is belting out, the latest songs. Imported liquor is flowing. And then at midnight, the light goes off and a shot rings out. And when the lights come back on after 10 seconds, then somebody has shot dead Vicky Rai. So the police surround the farmhouse. They know the murderer is very much among the guests. And they search all the guests. And in that search, six people are discovered with guns in their possession. So when you go to a party with a gun and the host gets shot, what happens? You become a suspect. So what I told you happens in the first 10 pages of the novel. First 10 pages. And the rest of the novel is really, who are these six suspects? Why were they in the farmhouse? Why did they have a gun? Which one of them is the murderer? So now can you really say the book is about 450 pages? This happens in the first 10 pages. So it was, Jessica Lal's murder was a peg. Let's put it this way, one of the pegs on which to start off the tale. But then, as I said, it's a much deeper dive into contemporary India. And also packaged as a whodunit.
Right. So the choice of Tigmanshu Dhulia, was it like, what were you, did you go looking out for a director, or how did that happen?
No. As I said, yeah. I'm not the producer of the film or the web series as it is going to be made. I spoke to the person who's going to produce it, and I said, I'll be appearing on stage with Shubhra Gupta, and she said, you cannot say anything. We are under contract. This will be announced at a suitable time, etc. So I don't know how much of the confidentiality clause I'm breaking, but basically it's a real-life entertainment run by Preeti Sinha. She's very close to Ajay Devgan. She is the producer, and she is the one who has now shortlisted Tigmanshu Dhulia to be the director. It's going to be a web series, and I think they are going to start shooting pretty soon.
So I think you said that both of you are Allahabad boys, right? Both Tigmanshu and you are from Allahabad, and I think it has such a lovely feel to that city, which is so specific to itself. I don't think any other city in UP or even in the country has that confluence of Prayag and the university and the student politics. And Tigmanshu set his first film there.
Correct, Hustle.
Yeah, Hustle, which had, of course, Irfan in it, and such a brilliant film, first film. So is Allahabad going to be part of the mix somewhere?
Look, I wouldn't say it's not an Allahabad novel, it's a UP novel. Let's put it this way, or rather a cowbelt novel. So in that sense, I think Tigmanshu got into the novel immediately. I mean, because what I have done in this novel is the six suspects are narrating their stories to you in their own typical voices. So for instance, who are the six suspects? The first suspect is a very corrupt bureaucrat who used to be the chief secretary of UP called Mohan Kumar, who suddenly gets possessed by the spirit of Mahatma Gandhi. So you have this very, very corrupt bureaucrat suddenly spouting, suddenly becoming the most benevolent man on the planet. So he's the first suspect. The second suspect is Bollywood actress Shabnam Saxena, again, who comes from a town called Azamgarh, small town girl, makes it big in Bollywood. So she's the second suspect. The third suspect is, so Mohan Kumar's story is in the third person. Shabnam Saxena's story is in the first person through her diary entries. Then you have Munna Mobile. He's a mobile phone thief who lives in a Shiva temple in Delhi, works as a houseboy in somebody's house, and he gets a suitcase full of cash, and then how his life changes. Munna Mobile's story is conveyed through first person.
How is he at a fancy party like this?
So this is the point. So this is the whole point, that I want to make you curious about each of these characters. What the hell were they doing in that farmhouse? How come they got entry into that exclusive celebration? So the fourth suspect is Vicky Rai's father, Jagannath Rai, the Home Minister of UP. And his entire, the way his story is narrated is through a telephone transcript. Which is a very difficult thing to do because, it is just telephone transcript. It's very difficult in a telephone transcript to convey, how old is he? Is he tall? Is he short? So just through the medium of, pure text, you have to somehow convey to the reader, what kind of person he is, maybe through the kind of conversations he's having. And then the last two suspects are the most interesting. There is Larry Page, the same name as the founder of Google, who's a forklift operator from Waco in Texas, who comes to India thinking that he is going to marry, you know, a beautiful Indian girl to whom he has already wired $5,000. And it turns out that that was, you know, somebody else, maybe somebody else sitting somewhere else and, you know, conning him. So, you know, his adventures in India. And then the last character is Eketi. He's a tribal from the Onge tribe in the Andaman who still hunt with bows and arrows. And he has never been to mainland India, you know, but the sacred relic of the Onge tribe has been stolen, has been brought to Kolkata or somewhere else in India, and the tribe wants to send him to retrieve it because, you know, people are dying like flies in the absence of that sacred stone. So these are the six suspects, you know, through my point in creating this kind of a narrative was, you know, India is the most complex country on the planet. It is, you know, the sheer diversity that we have makes a single narrative almost impossible to be the real India. Because any narrative that you put forward can be countered by, you know, 50 other narratives. As they said, everything that you say about India, the opposite is equally true. So I said, at least through the medium of these six different people who are each, you know, giving their own take on India, I can give a slightly more broad brush picture of modern India than you would through a single narrative.
So is the diplomat in the book, is that an alter ego?
No, there is no diplomat in this book at all.
Oh, it's in the accidental.
Diplomat was in the first
was
book
in the
Q&A.
Was Q&A, okay.
Where so, my protagonist Ram Mohammad Thomas was working with an Australian diplomat.
That's right. So yeah. Okay. So I got a little.
So there's nothing diplomatic about six suspects at all.
Okay, because I was wondering whether you guys was sort of tempted to put someone like you in one of your novels because you know yourself the best.
No, but I think that's the interesting thing about all three of my novels that. You know, they are not at all autobiographical in any way at all. I don't think. Yes, I think, you know, what you experience, what you see, what you hear, what you read, maybe that filters into your work in some subconscious way. But I consciously made it a point. I said, this is not an autobiographical novel. Because what I write about in the novels is very, very different from my day job. In my day job, I'm meeting diplomats and I'm going to cocktail parties and I'm kissing the Queen's hand.
Basically.
But in my novels, you know, there's murder and there's mayhem and there's all kind of stuff happening.
Yes. So you can't be diplomatic in the books, that means, and you can.
But that's the great thing. The civil service rules allow you to be as creative as you want to be. I mean, obviously you'd be foolish to criticize the government of the day or whatever in your novel, which I don't do. I just try to do a broad brush stroke of, you know, the issues which I see happening around me in India.
Right. And did you speak to Thigmanshu about the casting? We were speaking about the possibilities of some actors, and you said
yeah, I think I'm told casting has more or less been done. I know the names of the actors and who are going to be performing roles, but again, my lips are sealed. I cannot till the production house itself makes the announcement. I can't do it, but I'm excited by it. I think all these people will do justice to the characters. For a writer, I think when the book gets made into a film, the most interesting thing is to see these characters that were living in your head, to see them really in flesh and blood on the celluloid screen, you know, and then you make a comparison. You see, is he exactly the way you had visualized him or her to be or not? I think that is the interesting thing for a writer to see the creations that were in your head now appear in front of millions of other people.
Right. Also, I think because Q&A was a book that turned into a novel, a single entity, and this is going to be a sprawling web series, that's also going to be part of something different, right?
Yes. And I think this book is you know, probably very easily lend itself to a web series format. Because as I said, you know, in fact, some of the critics who wrote about this book, you know, in their reviews, they said, you know, actually he could have written six different novels. Because each of the stories is very rich, you know, in terms of what happens to these characters. If you just follow their arcs, they themselves could be complete novels in themselves. But I wanted this overarching structure in which all these six stories are playing out, but constantly interlocking, in the sense they are all suspects in a murder investigation. So because of the very nature of the book, I think, you know, getting converted into a web series would allow each of these characters fuller play, which they wouldn't get if it was a, you know, 2.5-hour film, because then you'll have to reduce it even more.
Right. And I also wanted to be I'm very curious to know whether you all thought of acting yourself. Has anybody reached out to you and said, Vikas, can we have you on board?
Well, I'll be retiring fairly shortly, and then I suppose, why not? maybe in season two.
So we have diplomat, stroke author, stroke potential actor. Ladies and gentlemen, the floor is open to you. Any questions? This is the time to be talking Bollywood, really. Okay, so I will ask you to tell me who would be. Okay, so potential. If you didn't know the names of the people that you knew, who would you think would be the best?
Look, this is a very different book because it does not have a center of gravity. You know, there is no
one person.
There is no one person. You know, who's going to be the lead throughout the film, like Q&A was with Slumdog Millionaire. You had Dev Patel sort of helming the entire film. So it's not that kind of a book. It's going to be a different kind of a thing. So I think, because the book is structured in such a way, it is basically ordinary people thrust into an extraordinary situation. So I think a lot of new and upcoming actors will probably find good slots for themselves in this. So that's what I feel. I mean, I am told that it's a mix of established actors and some new actors.
Yeah. So I think that's the change that we are seeing with the arrival of the OTT platforms in India, isn't it? In fact, globally, because the last 3 or 4 years since we've had Netflix and Amazon and Disney Hotstar and Apple and Eros Now, there has been and in the pandemic year, what we've seen is a dialing back of the dependence on the stars that drove a film. We don't need them in a web series at all. That's
right.
Something that we've seen. It's that the story is the king.
Exactly. I think that is what has happened now, that the story is now the main thing. The central thing is now the story. If you have a good story, because in a web series, you can lose interest in the first 15 minutes itself. If the story does not grip you, forget the entire first season. You will probably not even see the second episode. So it's very important that the story be such that it can grip you and it wants to make you to, follow the character arcs that have been built up in the first pilot episode itself. And I think that that's the very valid point you're making, that because of that, yes, a good actor is a good actor, whether in a web series or in a film. But now you don't really need to have an actor as the showrunner for the entire thing. Even reasonably competent actors who are not stars can also do a pretty good series. I mean, I've been watching The Expanse on Amazon, which is a science fiction show. And it does not have a single, major star. And yet the story is so gripping, you want to keep watching. And similarly, all the other platforms also, all the other shows that have come out. If you see, none of them are having, I think Saif was the first major star who sort of starred in Sacred Games. But otherwise, you're now with Voot and Eros and, Disney and Amazon and Netflix. You're having a range of choices now. And I think maybe there's too much content coming in.
Yeah, too much content only because we get so confused when we see this everything swimming in front of us, which is why I think that in the last 3 years, what has also happened is that because of the fact that we don't have any demarcation of good and bad, everything seems to be the same. That's the problem with OTT that nobody really understands. A film is a film, is like a 2.5 hour thing. You come and go away. OTT is like a daawat which never ends.
I agree.
So it has to be specific. It has to be very, very good to be able to hold 13 episodes.
I totally agree with you. In fact, now more and more I'm looking at limited series. Because now with these, the season one then stretches into season two, then three, then four, then five. I mean, you can almost sense that they are deliberately not ending the story so that they can milk it for another season. And sometimes it gets too tiring. And there are very few shows which are good season upon season. Some run out of steam after the first 2 seasons, for instance.
Right.
So that's why, sometimes I say, oh my God, I don't think I have the staying power to watch 7 seasons of this or something like that. Maybe let's go for a limited series because the story arc is going to be completed.
Right.
Because what I hate is, being left hanging.
That's called a cliffhanger. And that is the, that is actually a mark of good writing. If the writer will leave you at a point where you want to come back and you want to know, aage kya hota hai.
Correct.
How does it? So I asked you yesterday whether you were involved with the with the filming of Slumdog Q&A, Slumdog Millionaire, and you said not really. Are you planning on being involved in this one?
I'm told the shooting will happen in Delhi. So certainly, Aparna and I have already been invited to come for the Mahurat and then probably watch the shooting. So definitely, I would like to see. How a series is shot, for instance. But beyond that, I don't think I'm going to inject myself in that process because I participated with a Chinese writer called Su Tong at the Shanghai Expo, Book Expo, which happened in parallel with the Shanghai Expo. And we were on a panel together. And, he wrote the novel called The Red Lantern, which was made into a film with Nicole Kidman. And he was asked this question that, Su Tong, your book was made into a film. What is your reaction to it, So he said, an author's relationship to a film of his book should be that of a distant relative. And I think that's very accurate. This creation is a distant relative of mine. If it works and it does well, you can, we are quite close growing up. And if it flops, then you say, I had nothing to do with him, not seen him for 30 years. So I think that's a very sensible advice that he gave. So I don't want to inject myself into that process. I do recognize that the texture of a book and a film are totally different. And that, each has its own vocabulary. So my job was to create the book. And now I have given the rights of the book to a set of filmmakers. And now it's their duty to translate that, to translate the vision of the book into the film. As long as they subscribe to the soul of the novel, I'll be happy. But I do recognize that sometimes in subscribing to the soul of the novel, the body can get mangled.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it. And I think we also spoke about your third book, which was potentially to be turned into a novel and into a film. And it's kind of in limbo now?
No, it's not in limbo. It's called The Accidental Apprentice. And that has already been optioned for a film by the same people who are now doing Six Suspects. I think it's a question of sequencing. Once they have done Six Suspects, then they will turn their focus to Accidental Apprentice. And whether it will be a book, whether it will be a film, or whether it will be a web series is also up in the air. Because that also follows a very interesting structure, where there's a young woman, a 23-year-old girl, who works in an electronics boutique in Connaught Place. And one day, India's 10th richest man approaches her and says, I want to make you the CEO of my $10 billion company, provided you pass 7 tests. And each of these 7 tests, which, again, he says, happen from the textbook of life. You won't even be aware of them. It's not a sit down and write kind of a thing. And the choices that you make will let me know whether you have the attributes of a good CEO or not. So the 7 tests, again, can be fantastic. I'm not saying 7 seasons, but certainly can easily sustain an entire season worth of, episodes of, what happens to this young girl. Does she become the CEO or not? And by the way, the novel opens with she being in jail on charge of murder.
Okay, so murder is like a killing and all of that is like a running thread in your novels. So is Sriram Raghavan still involved in the...
Sriram Raghavan was the one who was initially going to do The Accidental Apprentice. And I think he and I had many sessions. But then I think he got distracted with other projects. And then, he's doing... He still remains very, very keen to work with me because he approached me for rights to Q&A the moment it came out.
Okay.
He wanted to make the Hindi version of Q&A. But I told him, sorry, the rights went away 1 year before the book was even published. So that's what happened. Bollywood never got a chance to option it because Film 4 took the rights 1 year before the book even made it into the hands of readers. But he wants to work with me, so I'm hoping that maybe there'll be an opportunity in the future, or maybe we can entice him to come back to Accidental Apprentice because the director has not yet been decided for that.
Okay, so here's your journey is very interesting because you started from the West. I mean, the people, Danny Boyle, UK man, international production, and then coming back to an Indian thing rather than going the other way, which is pretty much what happened.
It went the other way. Actually, second book was also optioned by BBC and Starfield Productions. And they kept extending the rights for 6 years. And then finally, I got exasperated. I said, look, you have changed 6 directors. And every time you say, you know, extend it by another year, I said, there are others who want to have a look at it. Maybe there's a jinx. Maybe you're not destined to make this book into a film. So why don't you let go? And I'm not going to extend it now and then maybe give it to someone else. From there, it went to a Chinese production house. And they tried their hand for 2 years, and then coronavirus intervened, and then they wanted another extension. And then these people had already taken the Hindi rights. So they said, you know, please now don't give it to the Chinese, we want the global rights. So that's how it happened. So, you know, I think books have their own trajectories, you know. It is a global market, but now everybody wants full rights. Because the nature of the beast is such, you know, whether if you're giving it to Disney or to Netflix or to Amazon, they want global rights now. So you can't no longer have the luxury of separating the Hindi rights from the, you know, from the English rights, from the world rights. Meanwhile, Q&A is just being optioned for a stage play in Japan.
Okay, that sounds like a completely, you know, fully exciting, fully exciting proposition. What a strange travel, journey from a slum, from a Dharavi to somewhere in Japan. How does it even compute? Just let me think. Okay, thank you. This was a lovely conversation.
Thank you, Shubhra. It was a pleasure. Yeah. And thank you for being such an engaging conversationalist. I really enjoyed myself. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Jaipur Bites, the JLF podcast. I'm your host, Laksh Datta. This podcast is produced by Launchora in association with Teamwork Arts. Please subscribe or follow to this show wherever you're listening to this.